Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Necessity. Welcome. Let's begin.
Greetings, greetings. Welcome to another episode of Real Life. I'm your host, Jenna Kepra, alongside my partner, Roz. Today,
hey.
July the 3rd, 2018, and tomorrow is 4th of July for all of you who celebrate, and those who don't celebrate, you still get to enjoy your day off of work, hopefully. How are you doing tonight, Brother Roz?
Hey, I'm still learning, but I'm glad to be speaking with you this evening and the rest of the Black Talk Radio family. Peace and greetings and love to Scotty as well. Just wanted to give him a shout out and thank him as well. But I'm still learning, but I'm good. How are you?
Still learning as well. And thank you for your words of encouragement. You also, Brother Scotty, and peace to you as well. For my little hiccup from last week, everything seems to be going well. So we will continue on with that. tonight's show. Choices, past, present, and future. We will get into the choices that we make. One of the choices that I made just here recently was to engage a brother off of in Norway.
Netherlands,
excuse me, thank you.
No problem.
Brother by the name of Dr. Wilf. We will be doing an interview with him coming up soon. Very, very interesting brother, and the perspectives that he have being from another country. I felt that it was intriguing to have somebody to let us know what they think about how we're handling things here in America in the same manner that while we're fighting racism, white supremacy, and slavery over here, we still be trying to help people abroad also. So I thought that would be an interesting conversation, so can't wait for that. Brother Roz, I know you had a particular direction you wanted to go with the show tonight, so if you would, be kind and let us know how you want this to flow.
No problem. I think, just to speak on Dr. Wiff, I just think it's great to get a non-American's perspective on racism, white supremacy as it functions here, based on their understanding of it and their thoughts and ideas about ways we can mitigate that, because we in this country tend to analyze other parts of the world quite a bit, some of us quite harshly, And I think it's always good to get the perspective of outsiders, because they might see things from angles that we don't, since we're living in the midst of it. And the same way that I'm sure they've taken information that Americans have discussed or put out there about the system, you know, I think it's good for us to do the same, because we might learn some things or learn about some different techniques that we may not have thought of yet here. So I think that's good. But the direction of the program is going to be partly health related and really just dealing with technology, because there's just some things that I think we just need to be cognizant of. I think we really take for granted these little phones and things like that. These things have become literal avatars for us. Like, we have two lives we live: the life that we live in real life, and then the life that we live online. And the vast majority of that information is held on your phone. And people, and I've seen people literally lose their sanity over losing their phone, worse than they've lost their sanity over losing their wallet. And the intimate connection to this device and the way that it's been used against us, I think, is something that we need to be vigilant about. And maybe if we hear some of these things, we'll be able to think of different ways we can mitigate, you know, not using it as much. Taking days when you just leave the phone home, so it's not tracking everywhere that you go. You know, times when you might want to just, even if you take the phone with you, you might leave it in your car and throw it in a cookie tin where it can't receive or transmit any signals to cell towers. And these are things that I've done with my family. So, you know, but just the whole idea of just trying to divorce ourselves from using it as much. And if we do use it, only use it for the things that are necessary, and treat it like a snake that doesn't bite you. It's just friendly, because the way that it's being used on us is literally like the worst form of privacy invasion that is seemingly self-allowed, because the way the system is set up, you have to have a cell phone just to live a basic existence. So you have to have
it's a portable computer.
Exactly. And I just want us to get into that this evening. So we're going to get into that first. There might be a couple other health things that I want to touch on. Namely, I'll just speak on one in particular, because I think it's really important, is apple cider vinegar, and people who drink it in its pure state without diluting it. It is one of the most deadly things you can do. It is an acid. It will eat up your esophagus. It'll eat up the lining of your stomach. People have gotten ulcers from it, because it'll tear through the entire esophageal wall, and end up, this acid can end up burning your lungs and all kinds of stuff. So if you're going to use this stuff, especially natural things, you always want to know how potent it is, especially when you're dealing with something like vinegar, because it's an acid. And some people think, well, if it's so beneficial, maybe if I take it, you know, in this most concentrated form, it's going to do me good. Not at all. You're going to end up in the hospital, and you might not even live through it, depending on how much you choose to consume. So with that in particular, please, please, please do not ever use apple cider vinegar, or any other vinegar for that matter, if you're going to ingest it without diluting it. It will eat up your insides. You may not think so, but if you experience it, it'll be a life-altering experience. So with that, first I wanted to also say, just to take care of some basic but very important stuff. Those who listen to this platform, who are part of BTR community, who engage with the different programs and the different radio show hosts and things of that nature, please donate your financial energy to the station, so that we can continue to bring you these programs and expand the network and do more. You know, you can donate at Black Talk Radio or BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. You can donate there. Also, you can join our BTR community, which is an online platform developed by and for us in the form of Scotty Reed, for us to have free conversation as black people about things that concern us, or if there's business opportunities or business information you want to put out, you have that ability as well. It's a closed platform, so it's also a platform in which you pay $24 per year in order to join the network. And with that, you don't have to worry about having your data mined. You don't have to worry about having your information sold. None of the stuff that happened on Facebook is happening there, because we have no corporate connections. It's a 501c3. So as a result, you can, you know, be sure that no one is trolling to try and catch you so that you can lose your job or anything of that nature. And like I said, you can be on the platform. Quite a few of the radio show hosts are on there. I'm on there myself. Mr. Reed is on there as well. You can interact with other like-minded black people, like the commercial said, and people who are looking to help us mitigate the system of white supremacy and abolish human trafficking and slavery, the modern-day slavery as it is done in this country and hopefully globally. But we have to tackle what's happening right here first. So with that being said, please do join and contribute your financial energy. Every little bit that is contributed is appreciated, and we thank you for that. And with that, we'll definitely jump into the gist of the show now. Brother Scotty, if you can, in the chat, there should be a YouTube video that says first video. Can you play that for me? I don't know if he stepped away.
Hey, listen, if you've ever been interested in becoming a professional paid speaker, you need to stop what you're doing and check out this quick video.
Did you hear that?
Data is fundamentally the byproduct of the information society. Every time we interact with a computer, it produces data. Everything we do produces data. And this data is increasingly stored and increasingly used.
As humans, we've largely underestimated the internet, a military-industrial complex created cybernetic feedback loop of communication and thus control.
It's hard to opt out of. I can't not carry a cell phone. I can't not have an email address, not have a credit card. And I can't be a fully functioning adult in this world without those things.
This isn't just a tool that lives in an electronic box on your desk or a smartphone in your pocket. It isn't a one-sided relationship.
If you look at Facebook, right, look at the level of activity, it's really extraordinary how much time people are spending on those.
Does social media have the potential of completely transforming the way we communicate?
Well, in many ways it already has.
I do get panic attacks when I leave my house and there's no Wi-Fi.
You interact with it. And whether you realize it or not, it is continuously interacting with you.
And we also understand that an awful lot of data is being connected, collected about you.
Everything we know about the world beyond our ability to physically travel, we now get from the internet. And it isn't just that we live in an era of fake news where we can't really trust anything we're being told.
And it's hip, it's hot, and most of us can't live without it. We're talking about Facebook. Studies show people are checking it on average about 14 times every day.
A digital realm is now informing and affecting our physical world.
And a study from Baylor University, 60% admitted they could be addicted to their cell phone.
The combination of which is an augmented reality. And an augmented you.
It's an epidemic. Texting while walking.
So far this year, he's had 25 people hit by cars.
If you're looking at your phone, you're probably not going to see the sign that tells you not to look at your phone.
New research tells us that this next story has about 8 seconds to gain your interest. That's the length of the average Canadian's attention span, according to new research by Microsoft. It's dropped by about 4 seconds since 2000. And scientists think that growing use of mobile internet could be to blame.
You were worried about where your teenager is. Now we know where they are. They're in their room online. It's a much safer place than a lot of other places your teenager can be. Point one.
Well, there are those who would argue that point, but okay.
For 1 week back in 2012, Facebook ran an experiment on a pool of 700,000 of its users and found that it could trigger a mass emotional contagion.
Controversy surrounding Facebook, running those experiments on users through the Facebook bees.
Facebook secretly conducted a massive psychological experiment on nearly 700,000 users. The social media giant manipulated the newsfeed section to learn if negative or positive postings affect your mood.
Facebook decided people are only going to see positive posts in their feed or only going to see negative posts in their feed.
They found that it did affect people's mood.
How's that for behavior control? And because everyone blanket consents when they sign up for Facebook, we all know this is by far not the only time we've been experimented on.
A glitch on Facebook began erroneously memorializing people's profiles
and alerting friends and families that they had died.
Facebook actually conducted widespread studies on its users, not just the one the company has confirmed, but possibly hundreds more.
I asked Facebook for a response to this about the Telegraph saying that there was more than one study, possibly hundreds. They did not confirm or deny that.
But that's just one facet. Have you ever found yourself having a conversation about something benign, like, say, that your back hurts or you spilled something on your carpet? The next day you go on Facebook, and suddenly the social media giant is trying to sell you chiropractic treatments and vacuum cleaners.
The topic they just talked about is finding its way into their Facebook feed. Have you ever noticed that? It shows up in an ad. Kooky coincidence or Big Brother?
Chances are you may not even know that your mic feature is on in your Facebook setting. I didn't. And if it's turned on, many people have no idea what they're saying is being heard loud and clear by Facebook.
The site itself admitted, quote, "We use your microphone to identify the things you're listening to or watching. It listens for buzzwords, then cleverly edits your Facebook feed."
Some people say this is the app, but I've tested it. You don't even have to have a smartphone for this to happen to you.
I don't think that people realize exactly how much Facebook is tracking every move that we're making online.
You have to remember that in these systems, you are the product.
Must be one of the reasons why even Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg keeps his own personal computer's mic jack and video camera covered.
Now, this data is being collected and used by corporations. Fundamentally, surveillance is the business model of the internet. We've built systems that spy on people in exchange for services.
But it isn't just Facebook.
First, it was Facebook. Now there's word another internet giant could be trying to skew the news, squelching unflattering Hillary Clinton headlines in its search engine.
There's an inherent trust that when you Google something, you are seeing the actual factual answer to your query or question, based at least in part on the results of what other people are actually searching for.
Google has also been accused of manipulating search results and news feeds. And the CEO of its parent company, Alphabet, Bilderberg Group attendee Eric Schmidt, admits that the way Google presents information has a very powerful effect on people.
A lot of the members of Congress who were grilling you last week made it clear that on some level, this Democrats and Republicans, that Google scares them.
You know, we make decisions algorithmically. We literally believe in the power of the algorithm and ranking and so forth. I do understand that Google ranks information and there's winners and losers, and those decisions have significant impact on people.
But even that's just the tip of the iceberg. Most people don't even realize the amount of data Google alone is keeping on them.
We provide a free and important service to an awful lot of people.
This is why Gmail is free. This is why Facebook is free. I mean, I personally don't use Gmail because I don't want Google storing my email. But last time I checked, Google has about 60% of my email, because while I don't use Gmail, you all do.
Recordings of your voice, a timeline of your Google searches so complete it makes the average Facebook wall look like child's play by comparison, a world map of location tracking data based on everywhere you've been, broken out by year.
No one ever lies to their search engine. I used to say that Google knows more about me than my wife does.
We're better parents than you are. We know what your kids' interests are. We know what they dream about. We know what they're worried about. We know what games they play. We know who their friends are. We know more about them than you do.
But Google knows more about me than I do.
Kurzweil explains, Google has access to the things you read, what you write, in your emails or blog posts, and so on. Even your conversations, what you hear, what you say. Google can combine the personalized recommendations of a friend, who often know us better than we know ourselves, with the sum of all human knowledge, creating a sort of super best friend.
And government surveillance is largely piggybacked on these capabilities. And this lets governments get away with a level of surveillance we might never allow otherwise. Now, I don't think we would ever let the government demand that we carry tracking devices with us 24/7. Yet we happily put these things in our pockets every morning. Or if we're told we have to alert the police when we make a new friend. We don't, we just alert Facebook. Or that we have to leave a copy of our correspondence with the authorities. We leave a copy with Google.
Everywhere you go online, your data, every digital trace you leave, is being recorded and analyzed somewhere to present you with a tailored version of the world. We may believe that just because we go online, we have the world at our fingertips, but it's actually a narrow view of the world, being not just manipulated by governments, corporations, or the media, but AI. Our lives online are being managed by algorithms.
The BBC reporting that algorithms are making us small-minded. Your life
is mapped out for you, but not in the way that you think. How predictive algorithms narrow your perspective and ultimately your choices.
You know, we make decisions algorithmically. We literally believe in the power of the algorithm, and those decisions have significant impact on people.
But even that's still scratching the surface. Through Edward Snowden's leaks, we've become aware of and grown accustomed to total surveillance, which it has been posited more than once was the whole point of the leaks in the first place. Learned helplessness. In the background, the intelligence community is running quantum computers. The NSA is using all of our harvested data, our tracked phone calls, social network posts, GPS tracking, internet searches, all of it, to run something called a sentient world simulation. The program has now amassed databases so vast, they can analyze our lives and predict our thoughts and future actions with relative certainty. With this tool, they are simulating the world one-to-one now, 7 billion people. War games, disasters, you can just take a guess what else.
I believe information is power, and information is becoming much and more ubiquitous.
And we're at a point now in technology where we really can change the entire political discourse if we want to.
We are residing in a total information awareness society.
And the logo, which I actually looked at in the last couple weeks that you should go and look at, just you won't believe how creepy it is, has a pyramid with this huge eye hovering over it. This eye that was going to be the all-seeing eye. The only problem with the Total Information Awareness Program was that they just put a name on it that was too honest about what it was. It freaked everybody out, and so they had to pretend that they weren't going to go forward with it, but of course what they did was they incrementally, and in very clear ways, recreated the Total Information Awareness Program under a whole variety of different legislative initiatives, and this idea that every single form of technological communication by law must be constructed to permit government backdoor interception and surveillance is an expression of what this surveillance state mindset is, that there can be no such thing as any form of privacy.
It's just that most people don't realize it. And this digital feedback loop is literally changing the human race.
They have found that it takes the average human being 25 minutes fully to recover his concentration after a phone call. But nowadays, the average human being receives a phone call every 11 minutes, which means he's never caught up. And the more you try to keep up with the moment, the further you fall behind.
That sounds like a big drop to go from 12 seconds to 8 seconds in 15 years.
I know, and that's the concern, is that it's about a 33% drop, so we lost about a third of our attention span.
8 seconds puts us just behind the average goldfish.
Researchers who are studying what multitasking, switching rapidly back and forth between digital devices, does to the brain function of mice.
We looked at the effect on learning and found that the ability of these young mice to learn new things was very much compromised. It took them 3 times longer or more to learn how to go through a maze than the non-exposed young mice.
You don't have to go very far to realize this. People are getting so emotionally invested in topics that when they talk to each other online these days, they talk to each other in ways they would never talk to people in real life.
I wonder the degree to which social media enhances what we already believe, and even searches, rather than expanding the conversation.
But people are talking less to actual other human beings in their real life.
Gallup took a poll in 2001, and every average American said that they had 10 really close friends. The same poll this year said we had 2. What happened? Where did everybody go?
The internet isn't just a plaything in a box.
We have the most powerful information system that we've ever created by any means.
We are being engineered.
The internet will be, there'll be so many IP addresses because of IPv6. So many devices, sensors, things that you're wearing, things that you're interacting with, that you won't even sense it. It'll be part of your presence all the time.
Most of us are suffering from information overload. Used to be the great luxury in life was getting information. Now the great luxury in life is getting freedom from information.
There's a reason they call it the World Wide Web.
And it's altering our reality.
Things are not changing century to century, they're changing year to year.
But clearly time is compressing.
Particularly like things seem to be accelerating to something.
Isn't it?
40 years ago we had Pong, like 2 rectangles and a dot.
And
that was what games were. Now, 40 years later, we have photorealistic 3D simulations with millions of people playing simultaneously, and it's getting better every year. And soon we'll have virtual reality, augmented reality. If you assume any rate of improvement at all, then the games will become indistinguishable from reality. Just indistinguishable. How do we know that that didn't happen in the past and that we're not in one of those games ourselves?
Yes. Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it was finished, though.
No, it was. And if you were listening to what they said, part of what they said was our attention span is just behind that of the average goldfish. So we're now at 8 seconds from previously 12 seconds, and that comes from quote-unquote multitasking, which is completely impossible for the human mind to focus on more than one thing at the same time. But that is what, I mean, even going for many, many jobs, that is something that has to be a part of your verbal repertoire if you're trying to get a job, especially if it's some sort of job in a corporate environment or in an office environment. You're expected to be able to quote-unquote multitask. But they're saying from their experiments with mice that they find that they have a harder time with just basic comprehension and learning with that particular model. So if that's what it's doing to mice, imagine what it's doing to us. And then on top of that, it was talking about how using these devices are changing our brain and the way that we function with other humans. Matter of fact, it's creating less interaction, and we're naturally social beings. So to not have that contact is further psychologically damaging us just from the lack of contact. It's like just like people who are placed in solitary confinement. It's a proven scientific fact that you are putting them in a state where they can go into psychosis and all kinds of potentially life-altering mental illness states just from being isolated from other human beings for extended periods of time. Dr. Wilson used to talk about staring at the small screen and how staring at the small screen narrows your field of vision, not just by the fact that you're trapped on the phone, but it psychologically narrows your vision. It causes you to be tunnel vision about subjects, not be open to information that is right and exact when it's presented to you. You're more narrow-minded. And they even said it in the documentary that it makes you small-minded. And that small-mindedness has to do with the petty arguments that we have over things that we shouldn't be arguing about. So I believe the technology is a big, big part of a lot of the problems that we have even amongst each other. What it does is it causes the mind to atrophy because you no longer have to think about your likes and wants. You have your algorithmic super best friend, as they describe it in the video, that knows everything about you, knows more about you than you know about yourself. And it's studying you even when you think your phone is down and it's innocuously sitting there on the charger. The mic is listening to you. All of those apps that you gave permission to listen to your mic are listening to you. And that's further enhancing how they know who you are. It's incredible the amount of information that we give away for free while screaming about our privacy being taken. That was the whole Hegelian dialectic of this thing. They terraformed our society in a way in which these objects are such an integral part of our daily lives. Like the guy said, we can't exist in the world without them. So we are beholden to them, and they are nothing but extensions of ourselves. They're avatars. Your phone is an avatar of you. If you were to die right now, the police could use your phone to come up with a composite of who you are just by going through your app, following Google, following Facebook if you use it, all the other Snapchat and all those other things that you use, and they use it to come up with a composite of who you are. Because everybody lives on their phone more than they live on their actual computer in their house. They are on their phone, unless that person does something that entails using computers so they have no choice but to use it all the time. The vast majority of us will pick up that phone because it's convenient. You pick it up, it's right there, bang, I'm on the internet getting whatever I need to get for the moment. But even doing that can become addictive. You heard the girl say in the video, I get panic attacks when I leave the house and I don't encounter Wi-Fi. Really?
Yeah, man.
But this is what's happening. Go ahead.
You have to also include your new smart TVs, your vehicles nowadays. All of these, because your phone and your Facebook and all of your music apps, like you were stating, they all synchronize with your telephone. So that is another GPS that you have with you. And it's, like you said, like they said, it's another way to keep track of you. And private conversations are not so private. Brother Scotty has a comment. You know, you come in whenever you're ready, Brother Scotty.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Greetings to the audience. Greetings to the host, of course. I just want to present the flip side. The flip side of that. I'm not disputing anything.
I'm not hearing you too well, Brother Scotty. You're breaking up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of low.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm not disputing anything that has been stated already, but I think it's also an individual thing. I think that some people are susceptible to certain things. Others are not. We let things control us instead of us controlling things. If it was not for the internet, man, if it was not for technology, I wouldn't be talking to you guys right now. I wouldn't have made the connections that I have made through my interactions with people that I ended up making real life, you know, meeting in real life and making real life connections. But also, as much as they're gathering information, it's a double-edged sword for sure. But just think about this. Prior to, and I say this with all humbleness, with all humility, I don't think there have been no documentaries made like the 13th and the one that came on CNN Sunday, American Jail, where both of these documentaries pointing out the 13th Amendment and slavery was never abolished. If not for New Abolitionist Radio consistently being on air and then, you know, the abolitionists consistently sharing that information, I don't think that truth would have ever came to light. I just don't believe that. So it's a double-edged sword for sure. You know, if you, like, you know, earlier in BTR community, some articles was posted about how they use DNA evidence from one of these DNA profile companies to find this killer. Well, without getting into the details of that, if I kill somebody, if I rape somebody, if I murdered somebody, then I probably wouldn't want to submit my DNA to get it profiled or anything like that. You know, if I'm worried about somebody tracking me, I can pull a battery out my phone when I travel. You know what I'm saying? There's all kind of precautions that you can take. Now, Facebook does what they do. But I will point out, and I am not defending Facebook. I'm really not. But every single person gave permission. When you play them little games on Facebook or participate in them little stupid quizzes and stuff like that, it asks you for permission first. And then what I hate is that I found out that I hadn't gave this app permission to do anything, but somebody I was connected to on Facebook gave an app permission to access their friends list. So you know what I'm saying? So it's definitely not something to take lightly, but at the same time, I don't think people should overreact either. Because it's a very valuable tool, and a tool is a tool to be, you know, like any other tool. You know, just think about, you know, horse and buggies, how long it took people to get to work or wherever they was going, and then came the car. But on the bad side of the car was car accidents. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's all I wanted to share.
Now, to add to what you...
Go ahead, Jenna.
To add to what you were saying, I'm right alongside of you. Like you, the biggest thing is that we have to know that it's a double-edged sword, like you said, because a lot of us, like Brother Ross was saying, they find these things out, whether it be by a leak or listening to programs like this, to when they go and check their settings and see all of this stuff. And like you stated, it always asks for permission. What happens is the biggest thing about, well, one of the biggest things about that video was the attention span.
Yeah.
Because these little questions, these little boxes pop up, because I do Facebook and I'm guilty of some of those games and disseminating information. So I recognize that me, myself, some of the choices that I done made, I'm already known. So this wouldn't do no injustice to me per se. Well, let me knock on wood and don't say that. But I have no fear about being followed, because I've already given out my information because of choices that I made. But there are others who make that claim that you stated, Roz, that they don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So it goes with individuals. Like I said, I want to second Brother Scotty again. It goes down to the individuals and the choices they make. Facebook, for most people, is a and I'm going to wrap this right on up, Roz. Facebook is a entertainment for most of the people on the globe. Other people, they use it for business, whether they are facilitating sales or they're disseminating information. So it's all on an individual basis, and we always talk about the codes that we should develop as a people. That's one of the first things that has to happen, so that they won't be just giving away their information without their knowledge. Before we get to what you finna say, though, Brother Rise, just want to let everybody know we are live tonight, once again, July the 3rd, 2018. If you have a question or comment, by all means, give us a call. That number is
704-702-5056. No problem. It's on 704-802-5056. Please give us a call. Press ** if you wish to ask a question or make a comment. And we look forward to hearing from you. Anything else you wanted to chime in with?
No, you go right on ahead.
All right, cool. No problem. Yeah, I wanted to third that. I agree with you on everything you said, because, you know, everything that can be detrimental can be beneficial. It's all based on how it's applied. The thing for me, and the reason why I wanted to get into this discussion, is because for the average person, that's their life that's being discussed in that video. They're not on it like that. There's not many people who are thinking that far ahead to say, listen, you know I have to use these things and partake of them, but I'm going to use them in a specific manner to make sure that it doesn't become something that's detrimental. One thing my son has said, he's now 23, that he has said to us multiple times, is that he was thankful that we controlled and monitored his use of video games, his use of technology. There were times when it was off limits, you know, he had to do other things, he had to read, he had to study, you know, just the ways that we prioritized his life around knowledge and self-development and growth over being locked into technology like a lot of his friends were. And as he was growing up, he was able to see the detrimental effects in some of the people he grew up with, their inability to communicate, their literally lack of ability to have an actual face-to-face conversation, but yet they could text all day, you know, not even get on the phone and have a conversation. So these were things he saw himself, and just being observant, you know, he would talk to us, and he was like, these were the children that whose parents would let them do whatever they wanted. They had the phone all the time. They were always on the tablet, always playing video games, you know, played the most violent video games in the house. It was all good. And he was able to see these things as a young, you know, young teenager into a young adult, how these things manifest itself in the regression of human development and human behavior. And you know, it also takes away your ability to discern emotion, the emotional state of another human being, just looking at another person and being able to discern that they're in pain or they're going through a tough time. Those things come from having human interaction. If you don't have human interaction, then you're not going to be able to look at another human being and accurately discern their emotional state. So if you say something else to that person that drives them over the edge, you don't care because you're not even perceiving that. To them, if it means nothing to you. Go ahead.
It was another part, and you mentioned this earlier about the woman stating that she'll have a nervous breakdown if she left her phone. I mean, the phone or the Wi-Fi. I can't remember.
Whenever she goes to areas without Wi-Fi, she gets panic attacks, is what she said. And I was like, wow. But that's what addiction
another
looks
thing
like.
To, if you could explain the, because there are several, this is a multifaceted attack. You know, like Brother Scott said, if we don't use it to be productive, we will hurt ourselves.
Absolutely.
Two quick examples. Brother Rise has spoken many a times about the diodes from the radiation that's caused from the phones. And also, I had a recent run-in with this in particular. I was getting realigned because you know what I'm saying? Went to the chiropractor. I was getting realigned, and I had my X-ray done. And this staying on the phone, it curves your spine forward when you're supposed to have a natural arch going to the back. These are other side effects of these devices if we abuse them. You know the old adage is too much or something. You can have too much of one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you say it? I could be mistaken.
That's pretty much the gist of it. Yeah, which is basically too much of any one thing is not good. And that's true. Yeah, no matter how beneficial something is, if you overdo it, it's going to be no longer be beneficial. It's going to be toxic to the body or to the system, you know, once you overdo any one thing.
We headed to the top of the hour, so you want to... because we done dance into this time. You want to get into that next video so we can get into the choices?
Matter of fact, I think we could do that one another time. I'm going to get into the couple of articles, and then we can go into choices. Go ahead.
Okay, that's great, because I wanted you to get into this particular article also. Ancient African knowledge holds the key to trusting ourselves and others.
Oh, that's the one I posted in regards to choices. So
yes,
yeah, we're gonna get into that. I don't
that at the top of the hour. Go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. No problem. Because it is an intriguing article. I'm not gonna read the whole thing, but I'm just gonna read excerpts out of it because I think the points that were made have a lot to do with what we're trying to do at Black Talk Radio Network and what Scotty intended to do as far as us fostering connections with other Black people globally, while also working on our problems domestically here, in order for us to make headway towards, like I said, stopping human trafficking and you know, prison industrial complex slavery globally, and to end the system of white supremacy. So, I mean, when you're talking about that, there has to be a level of trust. When you hear about Malcolm's travels to the Middle East and to Africa and all of these things that he did, he went there to develop these relationships and also to properly inform them. He understood, he made it clear that he understood that they were misinformed about what was happening in America, that the American media was putting out false information as if racism was, you know, basically being solved and things were improving. And he had to inform them that, you know, people were being hosed down and attacked and assaulted and lynched and shot, and he had to bring the truth to them. So these are all of the things that we can do with this particular platform, thankfully. And a lot of that has to do with trust. And trust has to deal with, and I think a lot of it has to deal with some of the things Neely Fuller talked about. You know, you choose what the problem is that you're trying to solve, and the people who wish to solve that problem work together. You might all might have different thoughts and ideas about how to get there, and you can sit and talk those ideas around and come up with, you know, some sort of viable plan towards making things happen. And it's just about knowing what the problem is. And everyone agrees that that is the problem we're focusing on. And that's what you work towards. And then, of course, once you work through one problem, then you work on the next problem. Or, you know, you might take a multi multidisciplinary approach as far as different areas of people activity that you want to, you know, work on at the same time. It all depends. But the bottom line is that is what has to be understood from the beginning, because it sets the precedent, and no one will bring confusion to the group by bringing things that are not focusing on the problem into the mix.
That's, so that's the code.
Right. And I think that that article kind of gets into ways of fostering trust, and how there's certain aspects of African culture that deal with trust on a real deep level. And there was, I remember there was a story Dr. Bennett told years ago, I'll get into, about trust. And it had a lot to do with the survival of a few communities connected to this one store in Ethiopia. And it was just a powerful reminder of how when people come to an understanding of reality and they codify around that, that you can have wonderful things happen where there aren't crimes, you know, going on in particular areas, because the people respect each other on an extremely high level and understand each other's place in the community and the role that they play. And no one is trying to ruin everyone else by being selfish or petty.
These are right, things right. Because we always have to govern ourselves. Which article was it that we was going to get into before the top of the hour?
Yeah, I wanted to get into... I already discussed the apple cider vinegar. There's one article in there telling, you know, discussing not to drink apple cider vinegar straight. So I'm not going to get into that again. But the one that I wanted to speak about was this one from Inverse. And it says, it's inverse.com. And it says, the food you eat might shift your risk of depression, study suggests. New research from Harvard Medical School shows that a high-fat diet in mice can alter crucial metabolites and contribute to feelings of anxiety and depression. It all comes down to the microbiome, the colony of bacteria that naturally live in the gut, and their effect on mental health. So again, this is talking about, because remember that depression is a byproduct of brain inflammation. Certain parts of the brain that deal with mood, if they're inflamed, you will feel like you're depressed. So it's saying that a high fat content diet was causing depression in mice, and we know as mammals, you know, we share similar effects with formulating specific diseases based on what we partake of, what we eat. And this society and this society facilitates high fat and high processed food diets, both of which contribute to depression and a whole host of other illnesses as well. We don't realize just how much a lack of sleep contributes to depression. You know, just not getting enough sleep, it can do such a serious damage to your mental health and to your cognitive skills, to your memory. You know, people driving
to your
while
physical
sleep.
Body also.
Yeah, I was about to say, driving while you sleep is the worst thing. Driving while drunk, absolutely. So you know, there's just a lot that goes into that, but they're saying that what you eat can really facilitate depression. So again, that healthy low fat diet, probably with more vegetable matter than meat, would be optimal towards not having to deal with depression. Also, there's essential oils you can use that also help with depression, because it helps with lifting the mood and also helping with brain inflammation. And there's oils you can use for memory. Like I know a lot of the citrus oils are really, really great for boosting the mood. Whether you're talking about bergamot, mandarin, tangerine, lemon, lime essential oils, all of those contribute towards lifting the mood and also help with mental clarity and focus. Rosemary is awesome for the memory, but it's also a most potent germ killer, so it's something that you want to keep around. I use that in my memory oil. Vetiver is another one that also helps with enhancing the memory, and it's also been proven to help children with ADHD. Parents have diffused that particular oil and used it in a myriad of ways to help their children mitigate ADHD and other types of high anxiety mental illnesses. That's Vetiver, V-E-T-I-V-E-R, Vetiver, that particular oil. And I use that in the one I use for memory as well. There's a couple other oils I use in it I can't think of off the top of my head, but essential oils can work wonders for helping people with depression and altering their mood to shift it to a higher vibration. So I think that's awesome. Then there was another one by DeutschWell or DW.com, and it says unique cannabis compound reverses brain aging in mice. What was the experiment? In brief, old mice suddenly had quote-unquote young brains after receiving low doses of THC, a compound found in marijuana. The discovery has huge potential for people with diseases like Alzheimer's, but that doesn't mean you should light up. So this is kind of talking to, I remember I discussed an article that I had, and it's still posted on my profile. It's actually a featured article on my profile on BTR Community, and it's from Jack Herrera. He was the author of a book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes, and it deals with the history of marijuana in this country, the different uses it had, from industrial uses to, you know, recreational use, the history of how it got banned and all the different things that went into banning it from a corporate standpoint. And he gets into all of that. But basically, he had an experience where his mother came down with Alzheimer's, and she was suffering really bad, and he actually utilized marijuana with her. She was very reluctant because she was from the baby boomer generation, and probably the first baby boomer, because she was older, and she didn't want to use it because she thought it was a drug. That's the whole Reefer Madness situation. She was alive for all of that. So she was just thinking, it's a horrible drug, you know, I don't want to use it. But he convinced her to do it, and when he did, he said that for the first time he had his mother back. She was remembering things. She was behaving in a more normal fashion because she had had some behavioral issues, all of that stuff. And he had ended up leaving her with like 60 joints, 2 months worth. And he told her that she should smoke two a day, and that was what they had planned to do. So during the time that she was doing this, she never really discussed it with her husband. She just did what she discussed with her son, especially once she saw that she felt better herself. She had no problem continuing with it. Her husband came across the marijuana and threw it in the garbage because he was also of the same generation. Like, what the heck is this doing here? You shouldn't be using this drug. Threw it away. She was dead in a couple of months. So this is saying that with mice, they find that THC, which is a psychoactive compound, actually makes their brains young. These are old mice whose brains function like young mice brains, so it's rejuvenating the cells. What happened to his mother seemed like it was rejuvenating their brain cells. And also, I discussed an article that talks about marijuana removing amyloid beta plaque, and the plaque is basically the byproduct of the dying of cells in the brain, which causes Alzheimer's. And the plaque, the longer it sits, it basically spreads the disease to other parts of the brain. So marijuana is also known to sweep that amyloid beta plaque out of the brain, which means it can't kill more brain cells. So there, in and of itself, it's saying it has the potential to halt the development of Alzheimer's. But then this article is saying it has the power to rejuvenate the brain cells. So there's a lot of potential there for, you know, probably even possibly the reversal of the condition, which is what he saw with his mother before his father threw away her stash and she ended up passing away without it. So yeah, it's just something to be aware of. This plant seems to be everything that I learned about it from, you know, my relatives in the islands and, you know, my Rastafarian relatives and brethren that I know and knew. You know, I learned a lot about this plant, and obviously science is catching up, and they knew this stuff all along. This isn't new, but they make more money off you if you're sick and dying, so they don't want you to have access to anything natural.
Hey,
thankfully,
Ross,
things are changing. Go ahead on, my brother Scotty.
So the weed didn't make her a lesbian?
No.
I'm just joking, man.
Weed does not have the ability to change sexual orientation.
Okay, all right.
The food that we eat can, the chemicals we encounter can, the water that we drink can, but not marijuana. No, it doesn't.
But on a serious note, though, I saw this clip. I forget what network it was, but they had these former NFL players, right? One of the most dangerous sports out there that one can play with those, as I heard it described, you know, those collisions are like being in car crashes. And you know, Junior Seau, we heard of people like him who was a linebacker ended up killing himself because he couldn't deal with the pain. Now, So I was watching this clip on YouTube with these former players, and they were smoking right there, and they were saying that they smoked all throughout their career. They said most of the people smoked. They was like, you get drug tested once a year, and they can't wait to get drug tested so then they can smoke. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I thought about that, and I was like, that's probably why we don't. That's probably why they was able to have a intelligent conversation and wasn't drooling, you know, and all that kind of stuff is caused because I had seen another clip where Harvard study showed that car crash victims that suffer head trauma, if they smoke cannabis, that it was like putting a football helmet on their little individual brain cells to protect them and what have you. And those who had used cannabis would recover faster. There were less fatalities, and those who didn't would, you know, succumb to those injuries. So, I mean, the science been out there for a long time, but it's like you said, man, so many of our generations been you know, programmed with that reefer madness and saying stuff. And I'm not going to say this elder's name. She no longer with us. But that was one of the things she used to say that I used to take issue with, you know, saying that black men going to be smoking weed and not looking for work, you know, saying and make you lazy and you're going to be sitting around in the days. And I just felt like that was the industry you worked in, because they want y'all to prescribe psychotropic drugs and pharmaceutical drugs and nothing natural. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when you was born was, you know, about when Reefer Madness came out. So, you know, I excuse her for that. You know, I just call it a generational thing. And, you know, you just
don't have all the information. I agree, and I know who you're talking about, and I agree with you on that, too. It's funny because, you know, cannabis is attracted to fat cells. The brain is made up of fat cells. And that's why it's so hard to get rid of in the body, because it's attracted to not just the fat cells that make up our brain tissue. It's also attracted to the fat cells in the body. And it stays there for an extended period of time, especially for people who don't do aerobic exercises very often. So also, you have what's known as the endocannabinoid system of the human body. The human body has its own system that creates and produces and distributes marijuana throughout the body. That's called the endocannabinoid system. The vast majority of people's endocannabinoid systems in this country are insufficient. They produce insufficient amounts of cannabinoid. And as a result, you have people with different ACE pains, and that cannabinoid, that system would mitigate that. That is what, that's one of the main purposes it serves, is to mitigate pain and inflammation in the body. I used the example before of when you see a lion hunting on the savannah, hunting buffalo, and let's say the buffalo gores the lion in its side, the lion can't go to the doctor, get some painkillers, and get sewn up. It has to just keep the wound clean and rest and allow the body to do its job. What gives it the ability to withstand such incredible pain and suffering during the time that the wound is an open, fresh wound is its endocannabinoid system. And when you understand that the brain actually makes, matter of fact, every vertebrate animal makes its own cannabis or cannabinol. And what happens is it mitigates a lot of different issues, including mental trauma as well. It is one of the things that facilitates the healing of the nervous system, whether it's a spinal injury or brain injury, like you're saying, traumatic brain injury. That is documented that it has helped people that were suicidal, you know, military vets that have PTSD and also have brain trauma from whatever they experienced in whatever war they were in, that those who tried cannabis were able to mitigate those circumstances in ways that they never could with like 20 and 30 psychotropic drugs that they were being given. When they were on those drugs, they were suicidal. They got rid of all of those drugs and just started smoking weed, and they saw a change in their life that revolutionized how they function with their family. Their wives were no longer terrified of them or afraid that they'll do some murder-suicide stuff because this guy would just snap and just lose it and threaten to kill everybody, including the children. Now they don't have to worry about that. So, you know, it's a lot to this. And if you just learn about the endocannabinoid system of the human body and how it functions and how important it is, and the fact that most people's endocannabinoid system is deficient, you know, even wild animals, ants eat cannabis, deer eat cannabis. Like, I mean, even Peter Tosh sang about that, like how many different animals that you can come across in the wild that actually partake of that plant, because it has those properties, and it heals so many different things. It's just incredible.
Yes, it's attractive. It has an innate attractiveness that draws not only us, but the animals as well. But right now, Brother Rise, not meaning to cut you off, but...
Nah, we have at that time. I know we got to hit the commercial break first. We'll jump into it.
Yes, you are listening to Real Life. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Not a Wu-Tanga. Welcome back to Real Life with your host Jenna and Roz. If you have a question or comment for the discussion, this first half of the show, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Press ** to unmute yourself, and we'll be with you as soon as possible. Now, I love when y'all be giving y'all individual opinions and your individual experiences about these things, because it's a lot of people that we done discussed this once before, but it's always refreshing because, like you said, it's so much stigmatism attached to that. When all of us as children had friends who smoked reefer, and back then wasn't nothing being forced on you like that. More times than not, people wouldn't want to share it with you anyway, at least down here where I'm from. So, you know, but that smell, that aroma always attracted you to marijuana, whether you tried it once or you still smoke today.
It's funny because I remember being a child and smelling it, but not knowing what it was. And I thought it smelled really good. I was like, what is that? And then once I was old enough and finally, you know, was able to put two and two together, I was like, oh, that's what it was, you know? And like I said, you know, coming up around certain folks in the family, you know, you just learn about these things. And I learned about it very early, you know, in my life, as far as just, you know, having family that was, you know, Rastafarians, and some of them practice other traditions, but, you know, they utilize it themselves, whether it was to mitigate certain illnesses, to help their child who had asthma, you know,
or just to relax.
Yeah, just to relax. So it's something that you will learn about in some form or fashion. And it also depends on how stigmatized the plant is where you're from. And that's another part of it, I would say.
It was an article that I seen you and Brother Scotty was having a conversation on about the demonization of marijuana in other countries, not just here, and had facilitated the drug war that wreaked havoc on our people once again. You know, first they locked us up and beat us for smoking reefer with the reefer madness, and then they put the reefer in, not only the reefer but the cocaine and the heroin and all of the other drugs, flooded us with it so they could lock us up even easier. So it's a multifaceted attack that's going on.
Absolutely.
And it's when you just sit back and think about it without any emotion. Roz, when you sit back and think about it with just with a critical eye and without any emotion attached to it, you'll see how ingenious these plans are and how meticulously they work these out on us to the point to where we believe it's natural sometimes. And that's what would cause that same reaction what Brother Rod, but Brother Scotty was talking about, as far as, because these, when people tell you this, especially the elder generation, they truly believe this.
Yes.
So they say it with such conviction that they know they're right. That's just my perception. But we're going, after you get your rebuttal, Rise, we're going to get on into the second half of the show about these choices that we make.
No problem. I just wanted to add a little more clarity. The article that Scotty and I were having the discussion in the thread about on BTR Community was in reference to the U.S.'s policies against marijuana and how that they were basically perpetuating them globally and forcing countries to come down hard on marijuana, which facilitated drugs and gun wars, Iran-Contra, all of that stuff was taking place as a byproduct of the prohibition that the United States was forcing other countries to instate on marijuana in their country. Now that the United States is relaxing on it, everybody's relaxing on it, pretty much. But before, when, you know, the drug war was really, really in its midst of its heyday, they were literally terrorizing other countries, like, you better not, you know, make this legal. And it was facilitating clandestine criminal activity. If it's an illicit drug, you're going to have gangs and people who just want to take over that market now. And that's basically what they were facilitating, not just here, but globally, is what the article was discussing. So I just wanted to provide that on that little bit of clarity so people understand that that's how the tentacles of white supremacy is. It's a global system. And the United States is at the epicenter of what white supremacy is, the bastion of white supremacy. Like I said, America was Israel before Israel was Israel. And that's pretty much what it is. So yes, we can move into this the next topic. What I wanted to do, Brother Scotty, if you can play the third video that's in there. It says second half of the show, and then there's like a YouTube link. It's only about 6 minutes long, but it kind of lends to the discussion that we're going to have. And we can get into the articles that you had first, and then we'll get into the one that you had talked to me about in the last hour.
Sounds great to me.
Okay, cool. So it's really short, but I think it'll facilitate, you know, the discussion moving in the direction that we intend for it to move. And George calling is hilarious.
Hold on a second.
Sure. If Scotty needs to, I can copy it and paste it again.
Can you hear that?
That your great grandmother built it.
Mm-hmm. It's just a little low.
Guys, did y'all want me to play the video? I'm sorry, I was on a phone call.
Oh, no problem. Yes, sir.
Oh, no worries.
Okay, let me just open it up. I get it started for y'all.
Okay, thank you very much, good brother. Appreciate you.
Yes, thank you, Scott.
The Americans seem to think that the party's going to last forever, and the holiday goes on and on. And they don't really see the error of certain things. I mean, Thomas Rainsford Lounsbury was an educator in the 19th century, and he said, "It never ceases to surprise me at the infinite capacity of the human mind to resist the introduction of useful knowledge." And that's what it is. People know better. People sense better. But they go against it. They just think there are no consequences.
It kills me that
it's a steady downhill slide. You know, this country is really finished. I mean, it really is technically finished. It's just a matter of playing out the end game. Well, that's true. It's true. You can see it. You can smell it. Anyone who can't see it or smell it doesn't understand.
Yeah.
There's a medical term that they use in hospitals when a person has no future left on this planet, they can't be helped anymore, and they put it on the chart, CTD, circling the drain, and that's what we're doing. We're slowly circling the drain, and the circles get smaller, and they get faster. I enjoy it. Personally, I don't have a stake in the outcome. Right. I personally enjoy this circus that I've been invited to. I've often said, when you're born in the world, you're given a ticket to the freak show. When you're born in America, you're given a front row seat, and I couldn't enjoy it more.
I'm talking about the fact that a war is old men protecting their property by sending young men, or rich old men protecting their property by sending middle class and lower class young men off to die. It always has been. It's all about owning things.
You know,
all of this, all of this back and forth and debate implies that there are really choices in this country, that we really have choices, freedom of choice.
Well, it's an all-volunteer army.
Americans are made, they're having trouble filling the slots in this all-volunteer army. I wonder why.
Well, raise the pay of the military.
Let me say one thing about choice. There is no real choice. They say freedom of choice. You're given an illusion of choice. Americans are meant to feel free by the exercise of meaningless choices. You don't have, you know what the choices are in this country? Paper or plastic, a pile or window, smoking or non-smoking. Those are your real choices. You began a sentence a little while ago with it's not a surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise that rich white men don't care about poor black people, period. So they're not high on their list. They're not high on their list.
George,
they're
not high.
George,
they're
not,
that's
I don't
nonsense.
Care if you love me or not.
That's
they're
nonsense.
Not high on the conscious or the subconscious list of those people who are in charge of things in this country. The owners, forget these foolish elections, the owners of this country don't care about the poor in general.
The owners
and
of this country, what are we going... is this Karl Marx talking to me? The owners of this country are the voters of this country.
No, you're wrong about that, my friend.
Aren't the owners of this country the voters in this country who elected George Bush?
No, they're not. Listen, politics, these elections are a charade. It is a charade. They are meant to... I'll tell you, listen, just listen for a minute. Learn a little something. The elections and politicians are in place in order to give Americans the illusion that they have freedom of choice. You don't really have choice in this country. I have an addendum to that. The real looting in this country takes place in the transfer of the wealth from the poor to the rich. I'm sorry that you don't like class and the truth, my friend, but you're just stuck with it. And the poor have been systematically looted in this country. The rich have been made richer under this criminal, fascist president and his government.
George, do you know what fascism is?
When fascism comes to America, it will not be in brown and black shirts. It will not be with jack boots. It will be Nike sneakers and smiley shirts. Smiley. The fascism. Germany lost the Second World War. Fascism won it. Believe me, my friend. George, you think looting is okay
if there's no hurricane?
First of all, property.
Can you break into tweeters whenever you want?
I have no problem with theft. May I be honest?
No problem with theft.
It's true.
Well, George is defending looting, but
I have no stake in it. I have no stake in the outcome.
I think
you have to give him credit for one thing. You have to give him credit. They're out in the open now. They're out in the open now. They're not even trying to conceal it anymore. The owners of the country got their election. They said, we're going to get this election. We put you people in that court for a reason.
All right,
now's
back
the time
to earth
us.
For you and now.
Yeah, forget all that stupid, will you? They're out in the open. They're openly driving the bus, and we're all in the back.
Because of the energy policies that were created here in California, not as a result of a conspiracy, but because...
You don't need a formal conspiracy.
Right.
When interests converge, these people went to the same universities and fraternities. They're on the same boards of directors. They're in the same country clubs. They have like interests. They don't need to call a meeting. They know what's good for them, and they're getting it. And there used to be seven oil companies. There are now three. It will soon be two. The things that matter in this country have been reduced in choice. There are two political parties. There are a handful of insurance companies. There are about six or seven information things. But if you want a bagel, there are 23 flavors because you have the illusion. You have the illusion of choice.
Right.
You don't get the real important choice. There's no freedom of choice.
That's a great point.
Yeah, George Carr, he's something else.
Yes, he is. I just thought that what he said was quite profound, no matter how funny it might have seemed, but he was telling the truth. And a lot of people can't psychologically compute and conceive of that. That's really what it is. And it's Davis talked about this on Tando. Scotty's talked about it. We've all talked about it at some point. At some point, we've all discussed it. But it's just that the vast majority of people think that they have a real choice. And they believe in, I think Mr. Fuller calls it the great dream. It's like, you know, the ideological worship of the concept of America. That's what he said. It's a great concept. But none of any of their tenets do they live by. And we see it just in the historical record all the way up until this very moment that we're sitting here having this conversation. So I think with that, there's somebody, this is Brother Otis. I don't know if he unmuted himself. Yeah, so I think with that, I think this is a good way to segue into the discussion surrounding choices, just because that is, I remember I used to tell my son that when he was young. He used to read comic books, and he used to watch Spider-Man on the weekends. They would have the little Spider-Man cartoon. And when he was really little, he thought that the name of the cartoon was Fox Kids, because he would always show up in the commercial as a prominent figure. So he at first thought Spider-Man's name was Fox Kids, and we had to actually teach him that it was Spider-Man. But the funny part is he used to always say, "Dad, I wish I had superpowers." I said, "Well, you do have superpowers." And he said, "What's that?" I said, "The power of choice." I said, "The decisions that you make set the trajectory for your life path. And if you make the right decisions, then you can end up exactly where you want to be, doing the things that you want to do, being surrounded by the quality of people that you want to be surrounded with. And if you make the wrong choice, you could possibly end up losing your life. You can end up being in enslaved in prison. And you can end up living a life that is completely horrific, that you wish you never came down here to experience. And it's all based on the choices you make." Go ahead.
Just to add to what you're saying, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have this discussion about the choices we make. Myself, a lot of life experience in my short time on this earth, filled with so many bad choices. Depending on, I put bad in quotations, because sometimes I have been lucky enough to have a second chance. A lot of us have not, so they don't have to be bad if you're learning from them.
Right.
Could be a corrupt or a bad incident that was the result of that choice, but if you learn from that, then you know you can count that in the plus also.
It wasn't in vain. Yeah, the experience wasn't in vain.
What George Carl was talking about with the no choices is the is these election processes. And I would agree with him to a certain extent.
Me too.
One of the first things that I didn't understand, because nobody instructed me as I was coming up as a teenager, is about these politics. We don't realize that politics is not just the government. Politics is what we're doing now. What we're doing with Dr. Wilf, with this Pan-Africanism, where we're reaching across another continent to dialogue.
Absolutely.
These are some of the choices that we normally don't make. We will meet somebody, and I'm just speaking in general. A lot of times what we do, we run into people out on the street with our busy world, referencing back to our phones that you was talking about earlier, Roz, head down. We're not having that that human-to-human contact that our bodies desperately crave. And we pass up on people that could do so much for us, not in a personal way, but just maybe somebody that you know.
Right.
And everything always kind of happens on happenstance, meaning that it's not premeditated. It just kind of happens. You've been talking to me about the ancestors, and it's getting kind of weird because I'm seeing things that are coming. And it's just kind of reaffirming some of the things that you have stated to me privately. So I see these things happening, and they always with the first choice. As far as what George Carl was talking about, we have no choices in that arena right now because of the bad choices, what I was talking about with my uncles and aunts. We haven't been taught as children to engage that part of our choices more. Meaning that we're not electing the sheriffs. Brother Scotty talks about this all the time. Mm-hmm. Also, shout out to you too, Otis. He's spoken about this several times, to where we're not putting our political power in our home districts. We're not doing this locally with our school board of education leaders, sheriffs, mayors, governors. We know none of these people like we should. And if we don't know them, how can we expect for them to truly work on our behalf if all we doing is just complaining from afar? They can't even hear our complaints because we don't take the time to go to the meetings that they're holding. So these are some of the choices that will have a long-lasting effect on not just our lives, but our children's and their children's lives. Think about some of the choices that resulted in Donald Trump being elected. Now he has picked two Supreme Court justices. Well, it will be two. And that's, what, a 40 to 50-year gig for most of them when they're elected? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somewhere between 30 and 50 years that they normally serve. These are choices that we didn't take to go and push Hillary out, even though the DNC, it has been revealed that they was cheating for Hillary Clinton. We didn't go out in masses enough to even prevent that. So these are those choices that end up, we end up tackling the symptoms of some of the problems. We like you like to say, Brother Ross, we didn't get to the core of that problem. We only addressed the symptoms, being the election itself, when the problem was getting out and sending somebody to represent us, particularly not nobody that they pick for us to choose from. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was going to say, I really think that somewhere in a great portion of our people's psyche, we're just defeated. And I think we're psychosocially conditioned towards feeling defeat, because defeated people either do one of two things. They either want to do something. They either want to do something about it, or they do absolutely nothing. And when you were talking about trying to get, you know, enough numbers of our people to interact and involve themselves within just the local politics to facilitate a change in what happens to them on a daily basis on the local level, and most of them don't even pay attention to that stuff. You know, never been to a town hall meeting. And I think that level of apathy comes from a deep-seated, and they might not even be consciously aware, but it's a sense of defeat. And I can see the same thing on the continent. And it's just an analysis with a lot of these corrupt leaders that are being voted into office, and, you know, the people are apathetic but about really making moves to change that. But then we also have to take into account, which is something that Dr. Mumbi, I post some of her videos every now and then, talked about, the fact that every one of those countries on the African continent that were colonized still have military bases that belong to their colonizers in their countries. And it creates a threat level. It's almost like how gangs will run protection. You go in the store, you tell them, look, if you don't want, you know, such and such gang running up in here and this gang running up in here, you got to pay us protection money. That's right. the kind of setup they have. And yeah, it's an extortion thing. So that's why they have free run of all of the minerals and the diamonds and the cobalt and the coltan and all that stuff, is because these people know if they try to fight the French or they try to fight the British or whoever else, that they're going to have military consequences that they don't want to face. So it's a combination of things. Go ahead.
Yes. I think I had stated earlier in the conversation about the multifaceted attack that we're facing. We normally only respond instead of being proactive. One of the proactive ways that I was talking about goes back to those personal choices. A lot of us, especially when we want somebody to believe that we're doing something, we give our intentions away. Even if we were getting ready to begin those actions, we give our intentions away. So now we have given away everything that we were going to do just so somebody else could go ahead and either report it or sabotage it before we get it in motion. Another one of those choices. So the answer to that particular choice about just giving away all your information is what you say all the time. We got to vet the people who we come in contact with, because we allow people to get into our circles with every single intention to knock down whatever you begin to build. That's one of the first choices that we need to start making.
But you know,
excuse me,
thinking,
I think that's the second one. Go ahead and I'll tell you I think the first one is.
No problem. I just want to chime in on that, because I think it's important. I think that social media has created a system where it's easier for fifth columnists and agent provocateurs to come into people's lives, because you tend to trust people that you have like-minded thoughts with on social media. So if you meet that person in person or you have conversations with them offline, you tend to automatically let them in, because you're thinking, oh, you know, we have a camaraderie together. When we post, we have similar thoughts and ideas. So it makes it easier, where in person you would normally be more scrutinous of someone. You know, for the average person, if you don't know them and you're meeting them for the first time, you'll go through certain stages of development of that relationship to a certain level of intimacy. When you meet people off of social media, people tend to get intimate quite quickly. Some people, not everyone, but some people do. So it's something to also be aware of too, and take that into consideration, because if you do meet people in the social media atmosphere, it tends to give the average person a level of trust that would not be given in a normal face-to-face setting, where you're meeting someone for the first time, or or having a couple of acquaintance meetings with someone. But go ahead, that's all I wanted to chime in with.
Yes, you are correct. One of the first thing that I believe with our choice is that not everybody, but most of us need to change. This is a choice we need to make. Is to think before we react, or be proactive, whichever side of the paradigm you're on, whether you're just reacting or you're thinking, we need to start thinking beforehand. I know a lot of us, and I've seen this with many of different people from all different places, in a conflict, whether it's verbal or physical, the first response is to react. And then they think about it later. Just to give an example, there's many of us who have said the same exact words to ourselves. Why did I just do that? Because we have been, like you're saying, the system has continuously trained us to react. And those of us who think about our actions first tend to talk ourselves out of whatever dumb situation that could possibly happen. Those of us who don't do that, we tend to get repercussions, whether it's demerits at work, for the young brothers on the street, getting beat up by other brothers or suspected races, or killings like what happened last week, because of those same choices, whether you panic. Because that's what I believe it was with the young man, the recent young man. I'm not going to get too deep into that, because I don't want to continue to share that death. But a panic. We tend to panic. Now, we say a lot of things on social media, like you said, Roz. But when you're in those real-life situations, we don't think. We just react.
Now, you know, there's one thing you said that reminded me of the video that we played, the first one. And one of the things the woman said in the video is that social media gives people the ability to say things they would never say to someone's face. She said that. Those were her exact words. And that is what I call keyboard killers and monitor murderers. They get all deep in their bag, want to say all kind of crazy things online. And because, you know, it's as simple as pressing the power button and moving on to the next thing, or, you know, clicking that tab closed and moving on to the next thing, they feel like they've one-upped you because they've cursed you out or they've called you out of your name. And you know that if you were looking that person in the face, there's no way anything like that would come out of their mouth, because the danger level would skyrocket. And that's just real-life stuff. That is just real-life stuff. And, I mean, I've even seen people who are not violent people, like people who've never gotten into any altercation in their life, get talked to a certain way and just wild out and lead total destruction. So you have to really, really be cognizant of what you say. It is a very, very, very important thing. That is something that I learned at a very young age. It's something that I learned more emphatically when I was making music and in the hip hop circles and doing, you know, performing and all of that. You learn about the power of your words. And it's really something serious. And when you come from a street background where your word is supposed to be your bond and you really held to what you say, it gives you, it takes it to another level when you're in a public space expounding on something that you feel or think, or something that some information that you're trying to pass along. Like Scotty said, there's just a certain, there's a high level of responsibility on a personal level when you go onto, I don't care if it's YouTube or a radio show platform or anything of that nature, to propagate information. It is extremely important that you do your darndest to vet that information, make sure the information is sound before you present it to people. That is just the basic but very, very important level of responsibility. Like, you know, they used to say it on Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. And if you don't have that as the foundational core character, you know, core characteristic of your character, then it can cause serious problems, because you can give out the wrong information, and lack of information can be lethal. It's something that we see,
yes,
on a regular basis, and that's something that I've said 1,000 times because it's extremely important. It doesn't mean that I'm perfect, but I know that I've learned from some of the best of our people about research and how to research and you
take
know,
us to the break,
things of that nature. So, let's go into the break. We'll be back after this commercial break. Excuse me, on Real Life, the radio show on Black Talk Radio Network. Peace and love. We'll be right back.
What up, son? Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio, new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome back to Real Life. If you have a question to comment or just want to add to the conversation, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. That number again is 704-802-5056. Press ** to let yourself be known, and we'll get with you as soon as possible. Brother Rise, you are...
Say again? I was just going to say, that first instrumental that Scotty played is one of my favorites that he ever played. It reminds me of, it just reminds me of a song that Fela Kuti would have sang on. It just has that aura to it, but it's a nice track. I really dig that. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. What are you saying?
Nah, I wanted to get into, to show how some of these people who have, they've been researching this, and I found this article. Mm-hmm. It's called pickthebrain.com.
Yes.
And I wanted to, it's called How Little Choice Can Impact Your Entire Future and Change Your Life. And remember, I stated that I believed, and this is just for me, hopefully those of you that are listening to us will just take this and see if you do it. It's not a knock on you nor me, because I'm speaking to myself as well, but just to pay more attention to how we respond to people, whether it's our children, our spouses, co-workers, employees or employers, just people that you come in contact with on a day-to-day basis. Think before you react instead of reacting and thinking about it. This article starts off, the future is very sensitive and highly dependent on the present, as events that might seem insignificant now can completely transform the future. Have you ever thought what your effect today actions will have 10 years from now? The fact is that most people are so much into instant gratification and have never thought about this. Short-term pleasure has castrated people's brains So they'll never consider how one action, one single step, can impact their whole life. The ordinary action, like to read this article, your future would be entirely different if you weren't here reading this article. This is called the butterfly effect. And in chaos theory, the butterfly effect is the sensitive dependence on initial conditions in which a minor change in one state of a demisthenic, can you get that for me? As a matter of fact, a bunch of these words I'm not going to be able to, I'm a butcher. Are okay. You right here by this article? You'll take over that for me, yes. Please.
You want me to start from the butterfly effect?
Yes, this is the butterfly effect.
Okay, so in chaos theory, the butterfly effect is the sensitive dependence on initial conditions in which a minor change in one state of a deterministic nonlinear system can result in large differences in a latter state. In simple words, something that you do now, like reading a book, can result in changing your entire future. The butterfly effect is the idea that the disturbance of the air by a little and insignificant butterfly has enough power to form different kinds of weather patterns all over the world, like a typhoon. But is that possible? Could a typhoon in the USA be formed by a butterfly in China? Edward Norton Lawrence, an American mathematician and meteorologist who discovered the butterfly effect, Lorenz found that the details of a hurricane, like the time of formation, are influenced by small factors like the flapping of the wings of a butterfly, which was far away from the spot that the hurricane was created. When he was running his weather model, he used initial condition data that was rounded in a seemingly insignificant manner. Rounded data means that he used 1251 instead of 12 and 5, 5184. This is really weird. The result of that minor change was a completely different weather prediction. Such a minor change in initial conditions resulted in a completely different outcome. To understand better the butterfly effect, consider the example of throwing a dice. The outcome of the dice depends on the initial conditions, like the direction you throw it or the thrust. A slightly different throwing results in a completely different dice outcomes and paths. This makes it virtually impossible to throw the dice the same way more than once. Of course, you can get the same result, but the dice's orbit would be completely different. The butterfly effect movie. Recently, I saw a movie called The Butterfly Effect, which perfectly achieves the illustration of the butterfly effect in real life. The movie follows the life of a 20-year-old college student named Evan Trayborn. Because of several childhood traumas aggravated by short-term memory losses, Evan grows up having lost certain parts of his memories the most horrible ones. Surprisingly, he discovers that he can live again these lost moments using his brain. Evan manages to change these memories by taking a different choice than the one that he has taken when he really lived in situation. This results to changing his future entirely and living a completely different life. Evan is trying to relive these moments to set things right for him and his friends, but he can't foresee the outcome of his choices, as each one of them sets up an entirely different future. He finds himself being a college fraternity member, a prisoner, as well as an amputated and helpless man. All of these final outcomes were the result of small initial differences in his approach regarding a specific situation. Even if the movie is based on science fiction as well as unknown and poor research topics like the chaos theory or time traveling, it illustrates perfectly the power of choices. A tiny choice that you take today can be the foundation of a sequence of millions of events and consequent choices that shape your future. For instance, the choice to steal something of very little importance from a supermarket could lead to instant satisfaction for not being caught. A repetition of this action could lead to forming a regular stealing habit, and after some years, you turn yourself into a professional thief. Then you end up in jail. Or the choice of going to the gym and improving your physique could lead to improved health over time. A repetition of this action for years would help to develop your sense of dedication, commitment, and hard work. That's a power that could be used in other areas of your life, like the financial one. After succeeding in building an impressive body, you decide to build a profitable online business where you give fitness advice to beginners and help them to develop their own bodies. This could probably result to great monetary rewards. Choices have consequences that transcend decades. MJ DeMarco, author and entrepreneur, has talked about the importance of choices and the butterfly effect in his best-selling book, The Millionaire's Fastlane. Choices taken today are like a golf club hitting a golf ball. As MJ says, choices made today impact forever. Our choices have consequences that transcend decades. This transcendence is horsepower. MJ gives an amazing example of how choices work by relating them to a golf ball. Think of it like a golf club striking a golf ball. When the golf club face hits the ball square, the ball goes straight and heads towards the hole. But when the club face is rotated a fraction, rotated a fraction of 1 degree, the ball's trajectory lands far off course. At impact, the divergence is minor, but as the ball travels further, it widens and widens until the gap is so large that getting back on track is nearly impossible. A bad choice can set your trajectory off only 1 degree today, but over years, the error is magnified. The divergence of your choices... Go ahead.
Let's stop it right there, Ross. Shout out to Gus. He would say it was a lot of metaphors, but I think they hit perfectly. Just quick rewind in my head. One of the best choices I had got, one of the best the choices that I made is that when I was out in the street, I was told just to leave town. Don't try to stop doing the reckless poisoning that I was doing. Don't try to stop it. Don't try to wing yourself off because I say that, and I don't know how many other people have done this or know people who have done this, but that's one of the things I call myself trying to do, wing myself off of the habit of being in the streets and selling drugs. I tried to wing myself off of it. The advice I received was to leave town, drop everything you got going on. I didn't have leave your girlfriend, leave your children, leave your mother, leave the rest of your family. Just get out of town. And my choice was to heed that advice, and I done that. If I had not. Just that one choice. If I had not, I would have continued to be out on the corner where I used to be at by way of my residence at the time and other residents that I had doing these shaky things. I would have got caught up because I had done got caught up before. You know, once they get a peg on you, they pretty much know who you are. They just wait till they have a good time to... put you back in slavery for a good while. They'll let you go. They'll let you get away for a little while with your little stuff. But once they see you getting a little recognition in the streets, they will tag you and they will give you some time to think about it. So I heeded that. I heeded that advice and I left. Consequently, I ended up in a shelter because I didn't have nowhere to go. I just kind of got dropped off in the middle of somewhere. I mean, it wasn't no place that I didn't know, but it was a place that I still was not too familiar with. Stayed in the shelter, ended up getting a job a couple days later and left the streets, right? That was one choice that I made, coming from a background where the easiest thing would have been to continue to do the same things that I had been doing. Choices that I still struggle with today. Now think about yourself. For all of y'all who know people who was in situations like me that did get in trouble, the last time you seen them, you wanted to tell them to let that go. Or it don't even have to be no street stuff. It could have been the last time you talked to your daughter or your son about a situation they was having, but you decided to let it go instead of giving them another choice. That's how that ripple flows through time. Past, present, and future. What are we planning our future for? You have any thoughts on that, Brother Ross?
Yes. I think that really the decisions that we make in all areas of activity just set the trajectory for your existence. And based on the things you learn from, as far as any mistakes that you may have made, that also sets the trajectory, and usually in a better direction, because you're learning from learning what not to do. Once you learn what to do and you become proficient at it, then you can really push your trajectory on a higher vibration and in a really positive direction. Now, the one thing that I thought, and I used to see documentaries on this on PBS, I saw a couple of them, about teaching inner city children how to play chess. And the fact that when these children learn how to play chess, they learn so much about the concept of decision making that they end up making really, really great choices throughout their lives just from learning about decision making in the concept of chess. They just convert it to real life and look at life like a chess game. So they start to think about how they want to formulate their existence moving forward, and they are better at it.
They become analytical.
Right, and they also tend to be more grounded in understanding what they want out of life, because you can only decide on something once you know what you want. So I think that playing chess is a great way to exercise the mind in a direction towards being proficient at making decisions, especially decisions for oneself about the things that you want to happen and the things that you don't want to happen.
Brother Otis in the comments put process. It is a process. I asked a question a couple months back about us having a code as a people.
Yes.
Whether we get along or not, just having a code to be able to interact with other people that look like us when we come in contact with them, because we know we could be we could have that eye when we look at each other. All our teeth be showing, but they be grinding when you see them. these are some of those choices. Some of those choices we can't help because they're not our choices to be made.
Right.
One of the choices we do have, the reason I mentioned the question about the culture, is that one of the choices that we can also do, that we can make selfishly, is to instill those choices. Like you were saying, teaching your children how to play chess, that's one of the things that I do, teaching my children how to play chess and begin that culture at home, so they'll be so engulfed in it by the time they become teenagers, running every scenario across their head before they react will be second nature to them. Excuse me, it'll be first nature to them. That's just what they used to. That's just how they handle their day-to-day life. So it goes back once again to the choices that we make for our children, which begins to mold the choices that they have not even thought to make yet. Make sense?
Absolutely. I think that makes perfect sense, because what I found, just as a parent and just in conversation with other parents, is that whatever you give your children as their foundational character traits that you want in them as a parent, the type of human being you want them to be, regardless of what mistakes they make in life, they will hold on to those core characteristics when things get serious. No matter how wayward they might be, or you might see and think that they're falling off the beaten track and getting into things that you think they shouldn't, when things get critical and the serious life-altering choices are to be made, you'll find that they go back to their core values that you instilled in them. That's why I've always said you want to put the best of yourself in your children, because, if things do get critical for them and they don't have you there in their immediate sphere to ask for, to ask, hey, what decision should I make, or what's the best decision for myself, mom and dad, they'll make that decision based on what you put in there. Go ahead.
Let me add this too, because we're getting low. We're almost at the 10-minute mark. So if you have any questions or comments that you would like to add to the show, by all means, give us a call. That number is 704-802-5056. Press ** to unmute yourself, and we'll be with you as soon as possible. That made me think about See, because all of this stuff is starting to just intertwine, and it's kind of beautiful to watch it unfold. Earlier, one of the articles that you was getting into was about the food that's making us depressed. I can't remember where I seen this article. I know I probably seen it on BTR, but there was I think Brother Scotty posted this, and I tried to find it, but I couldn't find it. Young lady, excuse me, not young lady, because they tried to hide the identity of the person, but at a job, the potluck had feces in it, and it got so many people sick, right? Now, we are thinking about these same things as far as your mind, your mental food, your brain food. We put a lot of this feces. I mean, we just putting crap into our brains, which is also programming us by way of the subconscious to act in these ways also. There has been such a downgrade in the purchase of cable and satellite TV. A couple weeks back, I was talking about it's a lot of white people, even on mainstream and media, using the words conscious, woke, hoteps. Like they're repeating all of this. They're not doing this on TV anymore. Since they're not getting us on the TV, they're getting us on the YouTube and all of these streaming services. So every time we make a choice, they make a choice. There's constant choices being made. So to get back, just to touch on George Carlin, all of that I agree with somewhat. But the number one choices always start at the house. You have to make that choice before you walk out of that door in the morning. It's, man, I heard that word today and I done used it so many times, man. It's a multifaceted attack. And the more you think about it, it's really simple to tackle. But I think the worst choice that we make, or that I have made myself, speaking for myself, is that I try to include so many people in it when I should continue to do it by myself and just lead by that example, if it's nothing but my children who follow it.
Yeah. You're right. It really starts with the home, and the better the parent is educated on who they are, their place in the system, how the system works, and they can pass that knowledge on to their children, give them the proper rules of etiquette, or codified rules of etiquette for surviving in the system and all of that. It puts them in an advantageous position to live a long and more healthy life than a child who's not getting that information. And that all comes with choices. You know, I look at the fact that if my parents in the early 70s did not decide to relocate to the United States, and, you know, the motivating force for my mother was that she basically had her entire inheritance stolen by different family members after my grandfather passed away. My grandfather was a pretty affluent Trinidadian. And because she didn't want to fight for what she considered to be his money, she wanted to stake her own, you know, claim to in life and not have to rely on his money. So she said the best way to do that would have been to relocate to America, which is what she did. And if she didn't do that, I would have never actually known or met the Venezuelan side of my family. We all connected and met each other in New York City. And it was all, that's why I say the ancestors orchestrate things in ways you just never know. The woman who turned out to be my babysitter from like the ages of 10 to 12 turned out to be an actual relative, and she was Venezuelan. And it was, I didn't find out about this information until after she passed away, but my mother knew about it before she passed away, that she was our relative. And I used to wonder why some of her family looked just like my family. And I couldn't voice it. I was too young to put the words together to say, "Mom, these people look like our relatives. Like, this is weird." And she ended up telling me, I was about like 18, and she was like, "Yeah, you know, Louisa was our cousins. Like, you know, her older brother and sister's father was the cousin of my babysitter." and he was a well-known baseball player. My mother was the only child born to her grandfather from my grandmother, and she was the youngest child, and he was from Tobago. He was of Ethiopian and Carib descent. Her brothers were of Venezuelan and Trinidadian descent. And we didn't put all of this together until her and my babysitter had a conversation, and my grandmother came up in the conversation unbeknownst to the babysitter. And that's how my mother and her were able to slowly put things together that we were related. So, I mean, choices. It would have never happened. If we stayed in Trinidad, it would have never happened. We'd have never met those people. We'd have never even knew about the details of that side of the family like we found out, you know, by them making this move seemingly haphazardly in the 70s. Crazy. So, I mean, I could just give that example, you know, as a choice, you know. Yeah.
Just one that's that we're taking advantage of now, the choice that the creator of Black Talk Radio Network, Brother Scotty Reed, shout out to you once again.
Yes,
a
sir.
Choice that he made almost 10 years ago to create this. Well, 9 years ago, I believe, to create this network and present an opportunity for people like us to have these discussions along with the callers and the listeners. Hopefully they're taking home some constructive knowledge as well as experiences. You know, thank you for that, brother. But we're down here at the 5-minute mark, Brother Rise, if you would.
Yeah.
You give us the prayer, and we have to get ready for next week. Thank everyone for listening with us tonight, for sharing your precious time with us.
Absolutely.
And hopefully you brought something, you got something constructive from this broadcast tonight. With that being stated, this is Jenna signing out, and we'll see you next week. Peace.
Yes, sir. Thanks again, like Jenna was saying, for spending your Tuesday night with us. We greatly, greatly appreciate your time and energy. Thanks to Brother Scotty. And also, he made it clear in I believe it was an episode of Tando, that it was an ancestrally driven move to facilitate creating this network for us. So again, the ancestors are always at work. So thanks to you, Scotty, and thanks to your ancestor. I believe it was your grandfather, if I remember correctly. Thank him as well, and your other ancestors for giving that insight that pushed you towards moving in this direction. Greatly appreciate you. Thanks again to all the callers and listeners. We will see you next Tuesday. We're going to say the prayer now and close out the show. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice ASAP. Stop human trafficking and the prison industrial slavery complex. I am in the love of the all, and all love is within me. I am a part of the all, and the all is part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is I am. The all can I can. The all does I do. Thanks again for being with us here this Tuesday, the 3rd of July. Peace and love. Enjoy your holiday if you celebrate it, and stay safe. Stay away from them slave catchers, and sobriety would be best, like Gus would say. Peace and love, and have a wonderful evening. Good night.
Yes, enjoy your time off.
Peace.
What up, son?
What's good, Dad?
Billie Holiday said a long time ago, no two people on earth are alike, and it's got to be the same way in music. Otherwise, it isn't music. Always remember, never follow the crowd. I have something important to tell you, and I'm gonna let you know.
What it is, what it is, what it is, what it is.
I believe in revolution, the retribution with 2 tons of pollution.